despair, he was in anguish, and suddenly he had hope. And he was just so excited. And he and Sally burst through the door with little Mary. And immediately, a neon nurse, closely followed by a doctor, came rushing up. What's the problem? They explained the problem. The nurse took the baby and said, "Don't worry, we've got her now." His moment of all this panic and this terror suddenly turned into joy and hope because of the compassion and tenderness of the whole house, but that particularly I love that story. That's one of my favorite stories of all time. You know, hope. The only thing we have in this sin-sick world that we live in, and that hope comes through Jesus Christ. Are you familiar with the word epiphany? And as Mark Twain would say, that's a 25-cent word if ever there was. Usually we hear it in some type of church context or something like that. Well, Mr. Webster says an epiphany is a sudden manifestation or perception of the essential nature or meaning of something. I don't know if that helped you at all, then. But let me give you a bit blurry. It looks a bit blurry. I had an epiphany not long ago. I was reading in Volume 9 of the Testimonies for the Church, and on page 158, the author writes this: if we would humble ourselves before God and become those things ye have heard and have not heard them. So he's talking in private, but it's kind of a semi-private situation, as we see in verse 25. We see, behold, a certain lawyer. Now, this is not like a Perry Mason type of lawyer. This is a Pharisee, and he is an expert in the law, the law of Moses, the first five books, the Torah, the Pentateuch. He knows it forwards and backwards and backwards and forwards, and unfortunately knows a lot of it backwards. And this is what we're going to, Jesus is going to show him as well here today. So, let me pick it up in verse 25. And behold, a certain lawyer stood up and tempted him, meaning Jesus, saying, Master, what should I do to inherit eternal life? Now, there's a lot here, and I just want to unpack just a little bit. We get a little idea of the mindset of the Pharisee lawyer who's trying to trick Jesus. He thinks he knows Jesus very well, and he's probably been shadowing him long enough that he probably does know Jesus fairly well. But Jesus, of course, knows him better. So he's going to attempt to trick Jesus, and he's asking Jesus the most important question that any of us can ask. And I hope you do this on a regular basis. Lord, what must I do to inherit eternal life? If you're not asking that question, you better get back to the textbook. And Jesus, as is his custom, if you will, oftentimes, before he answers a question, he will ask the questioner a question. And he does this so that the guy has to think a little bit. I mean, it's one thing that word out a question, but it's a little bit. What do you think yourself? And then you've got to have a little thought process. So, in verse 26, he says, what is written in the law? How readest thou? Well, of course, this is right down to this guy's. Yeah, he says. And I can handle that question. I think that the lawyer is also playing to the crowd. He wants to look good. The Pharisees were always trying to look good to, if you will, the rank and file Jew. So he answers, and he does great. He quotes Leviticus 6:5 and within that was the court of the women. The only people that were allowed in that courtyard were Jews. Inside that was the court of Israel or the court of the men. The only ones allowed in that were Jewish men. And inside that was the courtyard of the priests. And if you probably see where I'm going with this, the only ones allowed in there, and in there were Jewish men who were of the lineage of Levi. So these were the boundaries, and this is how the mindset of the lawyer and the rest of you, the audience there, they had these boundaries. That was their worldview. And Jesus is about to tip that worldview upside down. Now, in storytelling, and I think it applied back to the two. If I start a story out saying, hey, there are three guys go camping, you're going to assume I'm going to say that the first two guys messed something up. But the third guy comes along and he does it right. That's sort of the way storytelling works when you say it that way. Well, that's something that we're going to see too, that Jesus is going to deal with that as we look further along as well too. Verse 30. Jesus is answering the question of who is my neighbor. A certain man went down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell among thieves, who stripped him of his raiment and wounded him and departed, leaving him half dead. Again, a lot there, but back a little bit. A certain man, was he a Jew or was he a Gentile? We don't know. The text doesn't tell us. Suppose, but the point is, it could have been anybody. That was Jesus' point. Need to know a little bit about the road between Jerusalem and Jericho. It's 17 miles long. It drops 3,300 feet. It is steep in many places. It's narrow. It's treacherous. It's full of bandits. As late as the 1930s, travelers were advised not to go at night unless they had armed protection. So this is a dangerous place to be. And Jesus could have said, hey, foolish man, but he didn't. He just said, a man. So that is, that's the situation there. And, sometimes we can look at people, someone that's down and out, homeless, appears to be a wreck. And we think, drugs and alcohol, that's why God numbers that. And it's not my problem. Well, maybe we need to watch that a little bit too. Because here we have a man who is laying on the side of the road. He's been beaten, he's been robbed, he's naked, he's half dead. didn't want